Raidieraksts drošinātājs.
The first thing that I would like to ask, please tell me about your first, how did you ended up here in Germany, because I know you're Ukrainian, right? How did this happen?
So hello, my name is Yuri Kechur. Yeah, you asked me how did I end up here in Germany. Well, I studied in school. It was a school where we learned German, where I got my language degree. Then I started studying medicine just in my hometown in Lviv. And after 2 years, I came here to Germany to study medicine here in Germany at the LMU Munich, Ludwig Maximilians Universität Munich. Yeah, so now I'm here in Munich.
So how long ago was it when you came here?
Yeah, it was 2018. Since 2018, I'm trying to survive as a medical student here in Munich.
Yeah. Why survive?
Well, medical faculty and studying medicine in general is a pretty tough thing, and it's a tough thing here in Munich as well, because it's one of the best universities in the world and one of the best medical faculties in the world. So it was rather a joke. Of course, I'm not surviving, I'm thriving, but sometimes I do survive too, so it's both. But I really enjoy studying medicine. I think it really opens a big view on things, and you see things differently. Also in politics, for example, or just in life. So I think it's a great experience and just a huge investment in my future.
Okay, well, we'll speak about future plans later on, but I would like to speak about this thing that you do here besides the studying medicine.
Yeah.
Let's get to the point. What is MU Ukraine, or how do we spell it, and what is it?
Well, I founded Ukraine when the full-scale invasion began. Actually, you asked me how to spell it. I don't want to tell you how to spell it, because it's, you know, like these artists that just create paintings and never say what type of interpretation would be the right one. I also don't know. I think you can say Mukrain or Mukraine. The name stands for the Muk part, is the short abbreviation of Munich. This is when you come, for example, to Munich by flight, by a plane, then you see Muk and not Munich, so it's just a short form for Munich. And Ukraine is the name of the country, so I thought Mukraine is going to be a great name. And what is this? Well, it's an informational platform. It's a social media platform, a Ukrainian political social media platform. We inform people about all the demonstrations in support of Ukraine in Munich. But our most important task, or our most important goal, is to be Ukrainian voice in Germany, Ukrainian voice in all the political discussions in Germany, to react to the news, to spread the word about Ukraine, about the full-scale invasion, and what Ukraine really wants, mm-hmm. and what Ukraine doesn't want, of course.
Mm-hmm. But it is not only you who found it, so how many people are involved in this at the beginning, and maybe now, maybe the amount has changed, so yeah.
Well, it's a volunteer team, so you can't always... There's a lot of people who are working on it. There are people who are working on it on a really regular basis and not, like in every volunteer project. I think now we are around 5 or 6 people on a regular basis, and way more people on an unregular basis.
And are they mostly Ukrainians or also Germans? Oh.
It changed over time. At first, we had a lot of also German participants or members in our core team. Nowadays, we are mostly Ukrainians.
So, and they are also studying where you're studying, or there are just like random Ukrainians in Munich? And...
yeah, they are random Ukrainians with the same goal or the same vision to be this Ukrainian voice in Germany, to talk about Ukraine, to spread the word about Ukraine, to make Ukraine a political actor, and don't let other people talk about Ukraine without Ukraine. So, well, if we talk about faculties where people study or jobs, it's a pretty random thing. But yeah, with the same vision or the same goal.
Yeah, so, but what was the initiator? Why did you decide to do this? It was when you saw what's happening in Ukraine on that day in February, it was like, one blink of an eye when you understood that you need to do something, and you somehow came up with this, or how, yeah, this idea came to you. You know, because there are different kinds of things. Some people are, you know, collecting donations, others are sending something to Ukraine, others are helping other Ukrainians here. Yeah. You decided to do this, so why exactly this?
I was always interested in foreign politics, in international politics, in German politics specifically. What I mentioned was, even before the start of the full-scale invasion, there was a lot of people who were talking about Ukraine a lot of right things and wrong things, a lot of fantasies, illusions in Germany. And well, I mean, the politicians, the parties, the organizations, NGOs, and so on. And there were so many things that I would correct, or so many things that I would change, or so many things that completely are wrong, that I thought, well, why so many people or so many parties or so many politicians are talking about Ukraine and so much about Ukraine, and there is no Ukrainian voice in it. So people are just fantasizing about what Ukraine wants or what Ukraine believes, what Ukraine doesn't want. So what is basically the position of Ukraine without really knowing it. And it's just, there was a lot of discussions and debates about, okay, Ukraine wants this on that or that, or Ukraine wants to be the part of Russia or the Europe, or it wants just to be independent or whatsoever. And I thought, well, I think Germany really needs a Ukrainian voice who they can listen to about Ukraine, they can ask. Yeah, so this was, it was my understanding of it. If you listen, for example, to Russian, pro-Russian populists here in Germany, like, for example, Zara Wagenknecht, who is now a leader of, I would say, radical or even extremist party in Germany, she always tells that Ukraine would like to have a ceasefire. They don't want actually to get the territories back. They just want peace. They don't care about people who are now under occupation. They just want peace, and they just don't want all of these problems. And it's just Western politicians and Zelensky who are just pushing Ukraine to fight back, which is complete nonsense. Like that, for example, or if you listen to, for example, to right-wing politicians here in Germany, ultra-light right-wing, Alternative für Deutschland, AfD, for example, who just are spreading non-stop Russian propaganda here in Germany, also including about Ukraine, who are telling about that all Ukrainians are Nazis or whatsoever, just there's a lot of random, stupid fantasy stuff about Ukraine, which is also complete nonsense. I thought, well, it would be great if there would be just one person or maybe an organization who would say, no, just stop for a second, you just need to educate yourself and listen to us. And we know what Ukrainians want. We are Ukrainians, and we also know what Ukrainians as people want. And it would be great if you listen and just not spread the Putin's recommendations here.
Sometimes we see on the headlines in the news that since the war started, and I mean like 3 years ago, but in reality, the war started also already in 2014.
Yeah.
I guess you could say that also in the Germany, well, before the full-scale invasion, there were not so many people who knew that much about Ukraine or even where it is and something like that. So, and this, of course, changed since the full-scale invasion, and you are part of it. You are changing the views and informing people. So you could say that the Germans now are more informed about what Ukrainians, how they feel, what's happening in Ukraine and so on.
I think Germany is a part of a bigger problem or a bigger picture. Mm-hmm. Germany is, of course, part of Europe. We can't talk about Europe in the same, we can't talk about Germany and Latvia, for example, in the same way, because I think Latvian people have way more understanding about what's going on in Ukraine than German people. But I think in general, the Germans, in the beginning, the Germans were on the stage, this is the full-scale invasion, it's Ukrainian problem, it's not our problem, so we don't touch it, we don't need it, and we live like it doesn't exist. Or maybe we send you some empathy and love, but can't really help you, or don't want, or I don't know, maybe there are some other words that could describe why we don't do anything. And then they moved a little bit. They moved to the stage where most of the Germans would say or think, well, it's still a Ukrainian problem, but we see big danger in it. We can't ignore it. And we need to help Ukraine, and we are helping Ukraine. In this stage where Germans nowadays are, it's still the Ukrainian problem. And then, but I think they didn't realize, or they didn't move to the stage where they say, okay, it's our problem, it's European problem, so we need to solve it together. And of course, Ukrainians are on the forefront, on the they are avant-garde, they are doing the job, but it is actually our at least European, but rather global problem, so we need to solve it. And I think the longer Germans are staying on the stage, it's Ukrainian problem, we need to help them, we see the danger, but it's not our problem. The longer they stay on the stage, so the longer the way to the end stage takes, the longer the more time Germans need to get to the stage where they say, okay, it's European problem, we need to solve it, closer the war gets to the point where it's really European or it's really global problem. And I think in the beginning of the war, I think the German government really hoped that war is going to end pretty soon, pretty quickly, and that Ukrainian not really hoped, but I think in the beginning German government thought the war is going to end pretty quickly, so they just didn't want to help Ukraine, or didn't want to discuss help for Ukraine, because they thought, okay, it's going to end now in 3 days or in a week or in 2 weeks, and it just doesn't make any sense to help them. And then over time, I think Germany first tried to block a lot of different European and global decisions to help Ukraine. But then over time, Germany, I think the whole world saw what type of genocide is going on in Ukraine. And I think it was really hard to watch away and just to live the normal German life and not to recognize that it's genocide. I think Germany is still not recognizing that genocide is going on in Ukraine, at least on the governmental level, because if Germany would recognize the Russian full-scale invasion in Germany as genocide, it would mean for Germany that they really need to give real help. So they really need to, because as a civilized country or at the front of European values, you can't just watch away while genocide is going on just in your neighborhood.
You said that the Germans are not there yet to understand that it's their problem too, that they are in danger too. So do you have some ideas what should happen to overcome this obstacle? We know that there are hybrid actions, sabotage actions across Europe. Also in Germany, we hear drones flying around army bases or other critical infrastructure places. Maybe that at some point could be some kind of a wake-up call that we are also in the danger. How do you see this?
It's good that you mentioned sabotage, because I don't know if you saw it. Today was new about Germans telling about sabotage of a military ship. I don't know if you saw it or not. No. But of course, you can't tell now who did this. They just told, okay, some individuals. But we could imagine, right? Me and you, I think we could imagine who could do this. Also, if we talk about, for example, the explosions of one of the biggest chemical factories in Germany, or how Russians, for example, trying to assassinate the head of Rheinmetall, of this of the weapon factory CEO. So we are just seeing Russia, for example, the drones over Germany, or even drones flying over Ukrainians that are training in Germany. We see the news here. We read the news every day about it, and I think it doesn't really bring anything. I wouldn't say that Germany or German people don't really get who is doing it, but I think the way between understanding that Germans, that the Russians are sabotaging Germany and the EU, from this stage to the end stage where Germans, the West as a collective West that doesn't exist but still understands that it's their problem, is really big. And I don't know why. Maybe, I think Germans, after the World War II, or since the World War II, Germans have pretty fearful about possible war. And I think what is pretty characteristic for German politicians and part of the German society is also to have fear of possible war and to try to ignore any signs of a possible war. So I think for this case, the hybrid war is actually the biggest threat for Germany, because if you try to attack Germany via sabotage, or for example, or hacker attacks or something like that, if you don't attack directly, if you just find different alternatives where you can create space for Germans to ignore it, because they say, oh yeah, it's just one punctual problem, it's just one little problem here and there, but it's not the big picture. I don't know, yeah, these Russians are crazy, but it's still not war, they're just sabotaging some stuff, I don't know. Well, nobody can explain it, just let's live our lives. I think it's a good, it's so Russians are just, it's a strategic approach of Russians to create these sabotages and do all of this hybrid stuff because they know that it's not gonna end up in real problem. So I think it's just, you know, it's like in medicine, you call it circulus vitiosus, where it's just the devil's circle. So first, Germany doesn't really recognize these small problems as part of a bigger picture. And then Russians understand that they just don't get punished for that. And then they create even more and more sabotages. And it's just, and now we have elections in Germany, and Germans are really trying to influence German elections from all of these sides. And I think it's a big problem for Germany to not recognizing on a state level or on a governmental level that it's a big problem and we need to fight back.
You said earlier that Germans maybe say the wrong things about Ukrainians. They don't really maybe understand some aspects of, I don't know, what is going on there or something about Ukrainians. So how big part in all this have this disinformation from Russia? How do you see it in Germany? How big role it plays in the view that German have has towards Ukrainians, Ukraine? How big this Russia's disinformation is, to on which scale it impacts the German views about Ukraine, about Ukrainians?
Well, it has a really big influence. For example, if you take far-right extremist party, the AfD party, or how many Germans would say a Nazi party, Alternative für Deutschland, AfD, they, I would say 80% of what they are saying, or what would they say, or what they are saying during the political discussions, is basically a lie, or a misinterpretation at least. Of course, AfD is just one part of this disinformation program, or disinformation campaign that Russia does, but when you see how does the ratings of AfD evolve? For example, before full-scale invasion, they had around 11%, and nowadays they're around 22%. So they are twice, every fifth German would vote for the far rights, for Nazis, as a lot of Germans would say. And the problem is, the full-scale invasion in Ukraine and the partial success of Putin and of Russia, it brings fear to the West. It brings fear for their own lives, for security. The fear, it's like a nutritional medium for populists and for extremists, for extremistic and populistic parties in every single country. We see that almost in every country in Europe, populists or extremists, far rights, are rising. We can name them. It's Poland, it's Hungary, it's Italy, it's France, it's Germany, Austria. You can't really ignore it. The problem is, when Putin does some success in Ukraine and when they achieve some goals, and when people get this fear for their own lives, for their own security, for their own families, there will be people who will try to sell to these people the cheap peace. The cheap peace would mean we don't really need to oppose, we don't really need to fight back, we don't need all of this awareness campaigns, we don't need to talk about how Russia is hybridly trying to attack us, we just need to be friends with Russia. And usually people who are trying to sell you cheap peace are pro-Russian parties. And by coincidence, or not, basically by not a coincidence, they are almost all of them are funded by Russia. And almost all of them are also far right or far left. So this is how the extremists or the far right or far left populists are always rising during the war. And this is why during the war, AfD became twice as powerful as they were. They went from 11% to 22%. As I said, it's not only happening in Germany. It's just really happening in the whole Europe. And I think what Europe doesn't understand, or what a lot of countries in the West don't understand, is if Ukraine loses the war, of course, there are a lot of people that say Russia will go further and Russia will attack Poland and Baltic countries and so on. And just the world war will begin. And it will be also a blueprint, for example, for China, or a green light for China to invade Taiwan and for other dictators, because they will understand that, okay, no, we have no consequences. We just can invade everybody and nobody will do something to us. One of the biggest problems is also that even if it doesn't happen, of course, I really think that it would happen, but even if it, by any coincidence, it doesn't happen, the Europe, the West, and the whole world will slowly lose its democracy, because more and more far-right and far-left populists will rise because of this fear that is gonna come to the West. Mm-hmm. This is what we see now, actually. The Europe is now slowly losing the democracy and freedom.
We know that various events in support of Ukraine are held in Munich every year, also during the Munich Security Conference. So, in your opinion, why it is important to do these kinds of events 3 years now since the full-scale invasion? Yeah. That are still happening, Ukrainians are still gathering.
Yeah.
How do you see why it isn't?
There are a lot of different other platforms or events in support of Ukraine, in Munich especially. For example, demonstrations or rallies in support of Ukraine, and I think, or other charity events, for example. And I think the most important goal of these events is to create context. I think to create context about a full-scale invasion, about what's going on in Ukraine, I think it's context that reminds people what's going on. And I think you can't win in war if you don't see the war. And I think demonstrations and rallies really help Germans especially, and also just Europeans, to see what's happening. And I think, for example, during elections, to have it in their minds, take it into account what's happening in Ukraine and what different parties want or don't want for Ukraine. Mm-hmm. I think also there are a lot of politicians nowadays in Germany that really have fear of escalation. And I think Germans also need to understand that if they go to elections and choose one party or another party, different parties have different interpretations of the war and different levels of fear of escalation, especially in Germany. As I said before, that Germany has real fear of potential war or potential escalation because of the World War II and the big trauma that German people had since there. But I think important is to understand that you can't bring peace without winning the war. And you can't win the war if you don't escalate. And I think if the biggest problem in the West, or in some Western countries, is that European politicians have real fear of escalation. And that's why, as I said, it's just real, this circulus vitiosus, or this devil circle, where they have fear of escalation. That's why they don't escalate. That's why they just defend. And that's why they can't really win the war, and that's why the war prolongs, and Russians go further, Ukrainians can't get the territories back, and it's just a circus of all of that. That's really important to understand. Escalation is the way out and not a problem to avoid.
And speaking about the elections, so we see that, well, not 100% clear, but most likely the conservatives will win these elections.
Yeah.
And they are pretty critical about what Scholz did, that he hesitated towards the Taurus thing and towards different kinds of help towards Ukraine. So Merz said that we should give the Taurus to Ukraine and we should help more. But how do you see, do Ukrainians living here and Ukrainians living in Ukraine, what should they think? Should they think that these announcements are real, or are they just empty promises? Do you expect that if the government changes and the conservatives will come to power, there will really be like more help from Germany towards Ukraine?
I think it's a good question because, first of all, I don't really want to participate any kind of influence of Germans or in Germany in order to push Germans to choose one or another party, because I think Germans do have enough foreign influence in their elections, including Russians. I think if you read the German party programs, what they expect, what they write, what people could expect from them, different the parties, they are almost all of the democratic parties in Germany are for support, pro-Ukrainian and pro-support, including military support, humanitarian support, and so on. The interesting part is that different parties want that to different extent. There are some parties that say, okay, we want to help Ukraine as long as it's gonna take, like Scholz says, this is his favorite phrase, as long as it's gonna take. Actually, we would like to hear from him as much as it takes and not as long as it takes, because I think it's nonsense to have a war for 30 years and have Germany on your side, just sending you just enough weapons to not die. Mm-hmm. But if we talk about Merz, Friedrich Merz, or if we talk about Christian Democratic Party, it's important to say that they were all of these 5 years, it was less than 5 years, they were trying to oppose. They were basically in opposition. And the winners, the guys that are gonna possibly win the elections, didn't really participate in the decisions of the previous government, because the previous government was formed by the Greens, the SPD, the FDP. So basically by left centrists and right centrists. So you can't really know what to expect from Christian Democrats, from the CDU. I think a lot of what Friedrich Merz says is basically to demonstrate his opposition and to oppose to Scholz. I think SPD and the Greens are like this big, inside of the Merz head, these big problems. I think he tries to attack the left centrists and to imitate the far rights, like the AfD. He wants to get the voices from the AfD, and basically he tries to imitate the AfD, and also he tries to attack the left centrists, because the left centrists are one of the biggest opponents of the AfD, because AfD, this far right party, is basically on the far right. So basically everyone who is a little bit more to the left, it's going to be an opponent for them. And if Merz is trying to get the voices from them, he's just going to imitate them and also attack the SPD and the Greens. And this is also... Yeah, CDU was repeatedly said that they want to send towers to Ukraine. Is it going to be the case or not? I don't know. Because we saw, for example, like 2 weeks ago or something, that CDU, for the first time in the history, there was a coalition with the far-right party, which was a no-go before. So if they are gonna create this coalition during the next 5 years, the far-rights that are basically pro-Putinists are gonna block every Ukraine help. And yeah, it's gonna be interesting. I'm not sure, but I don't think they're gonna create a coalition with the far rights, because it would be way too traumatizing for Germans, and the Germans wouldn't really tolerate that, because a lot of people just hate Nazis and hate far right people. So I don't think it's gonna work. But if the Friedrich Merz is gonna do what he proposed, is he gonna really send way more weapons to Ukraine, and how is he gonna finance it? This is a big question. He talks, and also the programs, the CDU says that we need this extra money for Ukraine, and this extra money for Ukraine is gonna come from Germany's thriving economy. We are gonna push the economy forwards, the economy is gonna bring us money, and then we're gonna send the money or weapons or military aid or humanitarian aid to Ukraine. But as we all know, German economy, as well as every other economy, don't really rise or don't really evolve so quickly. And Ukraine needs money now.
Speaking about Ukrainians here, the refugees that came after the full-scale invasion, yeah. How do you see how Germany has helped them? I don't know, with not to go into details, but you know, the integration, education, how do you see how it happened? And then we see, you talked about money, economy as well. also were this idea from the conservatives that we should cut in Germany those unemployment benefits towards Ukrainians so that they find a job,
yeah.
do something, not only sitting here and do nothing. So that's yeah. only, I guess, some kind of a solution for the economy where to get more money, like if we take them from Ukraine
yeah.
and send it somewhere else. So, yeah, but how do you see this this help towards refugees and integration and
yeah.
everything with your eyes, with your experience?
Yeah. yeah. Nowadays, we know that Germany helped refugees more than helped Ukraine as a country. It's around 33 billion euros for Ukrainian refugees and around 25 billion euros for Ukraine as a country. And I mean, by this, I mean the real allocation, so the money that was really allocated. But this rule or this statement that these Ukrainians, they need to finally find a job and do something, and we don't want them just to sit here and just enjoy this German money and just enjoy the sun or the Bavarian beer, and how can they don't do anything? I think it's also one of the real, the Russian, pro-Russian, the like pro-propagandist sentences, among a lot of others, that also are really popular in conservatives nowadays in Germany. I think the source of the problem, I think it's true that the statistics shows that Ukrainians really, there are a lot of Ukrainians that really don't work nowadays. And this, but the source of the problem is not that they don't want to work. We see, for example, countries like Denmark, for example, or Poland, where the rates or the percentage of Ukrainian refugees who work nowadays is way, way higher than in Germany, at least twice or even three times higher than in Germany. Why? This is, I think this is the question that, for example, the next government should ask themselves. And also the previous one, the Scholz, for example. I think it's also important to ask yourself, why do Ukrainians work in other countries but here not? Maybe the job infrastructure isn't really appealing to them. Maybe it's hard to get a job here. Maybe the language courses are bad. Maybe certificates or some kind of qualification is way too hard to get here. I know that most of the medical doctors that are coming to Germany and that are applying for acceptance of their documents, of their medical studies in Ukraine, still didn't get any acceptance. So they just can't start to work. We are making this podcast, and in the house there, I'm showing you with the finger now, the house here, there is one other medical doctor who is just really trying to get improvement of her medical studies, and she's just trying to do it really hard. She invested more than 5,000 euros in it, and she still can't do it. There are a lot of bureaucracy around it. I think there are a lot of different barriers between Ukrainians and the job, especially in Germany. Of course, there is also a big problem that some Ukrainians are really traumatized by the war, or I would say most of the Ukrainians are traumatized by the war. Some are more, some are less. And you can't. It's great that they have such an opportunity to stay here and to get some aid, just to try to integrate in the new society. But I think it's just really a big also of the problem. But if we say this is the one part that I would like to mention. The other part is German aid, not for the refugees themselves, but for the country, for the German aid for Ukraine. Nowadays, if you count all of the German aid for Ukraine, it's going to be military aid, humanitarian aid, basically financial aid, inclusive share of EU aid, inclusive the aid that Germany sends to the EU and then the EU sends to Ukraine. If you just take everything, and if we talk about the commitments, so what Germans said or announced they are going to do, and if you just count everything together, it's going to be around 1.3% of German GDP. If we talk about Estonia, for example, Estonia is around 4%. The differences are huge between 4% and 1.3%. Of course, if we talk about the absolute numbers, then Germany would be on the second place. But I would like to talk about what the country can do and not what the country really does. I think the absolute numbers are creating an illusion of a lot of money and a lot of help, especially if you just send this money just with small parts and announce it every second week or something, then you just create an illusion of that Germany is really helping every week, that it looks like Germany earns a little bit and then they send it right away to Ukraine, but it's not true. So basically it was 1.3% of the GDP of commitments. So how much did Germany help Ukraine? But if we talk about the allocations, so the real allocations, so the real what really was sent to Ukraine, or what is at least inside of the program, is directly in the helping program. So what is gonna be sent, because it's all already planned, it's gonna be half as much. It's gonna be not even 1.3%, it's gonna be only 0.7% of German GDP is the actual, the real allocations. And it's inclusive, it's share of EU aid inclusive. So it's we include in it the money or the help that Germany sends to EU, and then they send it to Ukraine. So all Ukrainians are really grateful for what Germany does for Ukraine, but there really can be also said that there can be more, and you can't win the war with 1.3% of GDP help. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it's not everything. It's not all what I wanted to say about it, because it's really a big topic about Germany's help for Ukraine. We see also that the planned help for Ukraine is also shrinking. In 2024, if we talk about the planned help in the budget, for example, the planned help for Ukraine for 2024 was around 7.5 billion. And 2025 or 2026, it's half as much, two times less. It's going to be 4 billions in 2025 and only 3 billions in 2026. And 2027 and 28, it's going to be only 0.5 billion. So comparing to, if you compare 2027 and 2028 to 24, it's 15 times less. So the plan of Germany is basically reducing help to Ukraine to basically almost zero. It's really concerning, especially if you think about how much, if you think vice versa, if you think, for example, how much did EU pay not Ukraine but Russia, for example, for oil or for gas. When nowadays, if you take the span, the time of the full-scale invasion, EU paid Russia around 111 billion euros only for oil. And for gas, it's also around 197 billion euros. So it's basically 200 billion euros just for the natural resources, just during the full-scale invasion, and also a lot of money before. So it's basically a lot of fuel for Russia to keep going. Germany does do a lot for Ukraine. Germany could do way more. They have all the possibilities. And unfortunately, they are not doing enough to help Ukraine win the war. They are not helping Ukraine as much as possible, but only as long as possible. And it would be great if it would be vice versa.
At the end of our interview, I would like to ask about your future. So you're studying medicine right now. Where do you see yourself, I don't know, in the coming future, whether you will, I don't know, live maybe here and work here as a doctor, or go maybe back to Ukraine, share your experience and knowledge there? So what do you think, what will your future be?
Yeah, since I'm really concerned about my future because of the Russian full-scale invasion, I think I'm the right person to talk about full-scale invasion, but the wrong person to talk about my own future, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. So actually, I can't really imagine what I'm gonna do in 2 weeks, for example, you know. Yeah. Of course, I'm now in the final stage of my medical study. I do a lot of politics nowadays. I do both. I do medicine and politics nowadays. German-Ukrainian politics, international politics, German politics, Ukrainian politics. But the world is way too unstable. I can't really give you, you're expecting prognosis about the war or about my own future. And since the both things are really very associated with each other, I can't really say you. I have plans, I have some ideas, both in politics and in medicine, but how it's gonna really look like, I really can't say you.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. It was a great opportunity for me. Thank you.
Raidieraksts drošinātājs. Liels paldies Rihardam Plūmēm. Viņš sarunājās ar Minhenē dzīvojošo ukraini Juriju Kečuru. Paldies par šo ieskatu Vācijas sabiedriskajā domā attiecībā pret Ukrainu un to, ko dara paši Ukraiņi. Tu biji Minhenē vairākas dienas, vai ir tev vēl kaut kas piebilstams pie tā, ko jūs runājāt ar Juriju?
Jā, nu, intervija tiešām bija gara, tur bija daudz lietas, ko mēs pārunājām. Nu, būtībā viss jau arī intervijā tika iekļauts, bet es satiku arī viņu tieši vienā no demonstrācijām, mītiņiem, kas ik gadu notiek Minhenes drošības konferences laikā, par kuru arī viņš savā platformā informēja cilvēkus, un pēc tam skatījos, ka arī bija dažādas fotogrāfijas no turienes ieliktas. Mītiņš tur starp mediju atrašanās vietu un starp pašu konferences atrašanās vietu katru gadu notiek, un tur pulcējas simtiem gan ukraiņu, gan īstenībā arī aptuveni puse no cilvēkiem ir vācieši ar dažādiem karo un citu Ukrainas krāsās atribūtiku, to starp kādām pat automašīnām atvestām, uzlietas skatuves, pāris teltis, kur nopirkt kaut kādas lietiņas arī ar Ukrainas simboliku, kuru tad tālāki ienākumi par šīm lietām tad arī tiek ziedoti Ukrainas atbalstam. Tā kā arī tur es viņu satiku un satiku arī citus Ukrainus, starp citu Ukraini Olhu arī es satiku, ar kuru mēs runājam tieši pirms gada. Minhenē arī uzklausīja toreiz viņas stāstu, kurš bija tas stāsts, kur ģimene kara dēļ tika izšķirta, jo viņa ar dēlu dzīvo Vācijā, joprojām divatā, bet meita ar vīru šobrīd dzīvo Kijevā, tā kā bija ļoti liels prieks satikt arī viņu un aprunāties, kā viņai ir gājis šī gada laikā, tā kā noteikti varat atrast arī ar viņu interviju, aptuveni tieši pirms gada, ja patīsiet atpakaļ mūsu epizožu lentu, droši varat noklausīties arī to.
Tevis pieminētās fotogrāfijas no konkrētā mītiņa un vēl dažiem citiem Jurija un viņa domu biedu rīkotajiem mītiņiem un demonstrācijām varēsiet skatīt LSM LV portālā, kad nedēļas nogalē tur tiks publicēta šīs sarunas drukātā versija, tā kā lasiet to, skatīties bildes, ieraudzīsiet pašu Juriju Vaigārī. Un, protams, kā vienmēr mēs aicināsim dalīties ar šo interviju, pārsūtiet tiem, kuru tā varētu interesēt. Nu jā, un ja jums ir zinām interesanti cilvēki, kurus noteikti vajadzētu nointervēt tieši drošinātājiem, tad, ja šie cilvēki ir saistīti ar palīdzību Ukrainai, ar būšanu Ukrainā, ar jau kāda veida šādu te tematiku, tad droši rakstiet mums uz drošinātājs at Latvijas Radio LV, lasām jūs vēstules, tāpat varat mūs uzrunāt arī sociālajos tīklos vai varat dalīties sociālajos tīklos ar mūsu saturu, mēs par to tikai ļoti priecātos, izmantojiet mirkļbirku drošinātājs, tad arī pamanīsim šos vēstījumus un atvedoties, gribas teikt, jā, pirmdien trīs gadi kopš lielā pilna mēroga iebrukuma nelikumīgā, brutālā un postu nesošā iebrukuma Krievijas iebrukuma Ukrainā. Šis ir brīdis, kad, nu kā parasti gadadienās, atminās un sēro, bet es aicinātu būt aktīviem un atbalstīt Ukrainu šajā patiesībā tik izšķirošajā mirklī. Jūs visi labi ziniet, mums Latvijā ir gana daudz organizācijas, kas turpina atbalstīt Ukrainu. Ja neziniet, bet jums ir vēlme atbalstīt, tad arī rakstiet mums, mēs noteikti padalīsimies ar dažādām iespējām, kā varat atbalstīt Ukrainu. Galgalā tuvojas vasara, atvaļinājuma laiks un tā tālāk. Es zinu, ka ir latvieši, kas brauc uz Ukrainu kā brīvprātīgie, palīdzēt gatavot ēst, palīdzēt daudz un dažādos veidos. Tāpat turpinās palīdzības sūtīšanas no Latvijas uz Ukrainu, ja jums ir automašīna, degviela, jebkas, kas var palīdzēt vai kad naudas līdzekļi savidīsim jūs kopā ar attiecīgajiem aktīvistiem, attiecīgajiem organizācijām. Galvenais būtu nepalikt malā un kāpēc gan šo ļoti bēdīgo un asiņaino trīs gadus atceras dienu nepieminēt noziedojot Ukraiņiem, lai viņi sakauj iebrucējus.
Jā, galgalā Ukrainai palīdzība ir nepieciešama un būs nepieciešama neatkarīgi no tā, vai un kad tiks panākts kāds pamieris vai miers. Protams, ka turpiniet to darīt, ja esat iesākuši vai varbūt apdomājiet iesākt jebkādā veidā kaut ko palīdzēt Ukrainai, protams, ka visi to novērtēs. Un, protams, ka tiekamies jau arī drīz vien pēc nedēļas, kad jau būs sācies ceturtais pilna mēroga iebrukuma gads, joprojām mēs būsim kopā ar jums un gan jaunas intervijas, gan jaunu analīzi noteikti arī piedāvāsim, lai vieglāk orientēties visā šajā ziņu un izteikumu gūzmā ir arī jums. Bet tikmēr atcerieties, drošinātājs tas ir skaidri un personīgi par karu Ukrainā.
Visu labu! Raidieraksts drošinātājs.